Rogers Weekday Sports Beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM. WSBT.
Martin for three. Got it!
The Clay Colonials win the state championship.
Notre Dame has beaten number one BC. Over the board come the Irish.
Cubs win.
Her shot is up. No good. And the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame have won the national championship.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske. Wow. Win the Daytona 500.
The Stanley Cup to the Chicago Blackhawks.
The Irish has upset Florida State. Notre Dame is number one.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we are live at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend for this installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. We're also brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. My name is Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. South Bend Cubs continue their homestand tonight. No rain today. We have bright sunshine. No clouds overhead. First pitch tonight at 7:35. It's 7:35 because we've got fireworks after the game. And that means our Jordan Automotive Group pregame show starts our coverage tonight at 7:20, which also means we have a full 2 hours of Sports Beat this evening. Here's what we're going to do today. We're going to do part two of our what will be the signs of a successful turnaround for the Notre Dame football team from a four-win season last year to what they're going to be this year. We looked at offense yesterday. We'll look at signs that the defense could be on the verge of a big turnaround season coming up in just a little bit. Bottom of this hour, the Associated Press released a story today on Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly. It was written by Ralph Russo, an AP college football writer. And there were a couple of quotes that stood out, so we will bring you those quotes and talk about those quotes coming up at the bottom of this hour. And in about, oh, I would say 35 minutes or so, we're going to be joined by Dean Huppert. You probably have known him for years on Fox 28, spent some time at WSBT 22. He has a new venture. He is the new athletic director at Mishawaka High School, so we'll talk to Dean coming up later on this hour. 6 o'clock hour, rapid fire, a recap of Cubs-Yankees at Wrigley Field. And we'll reset where the South Bend Cubs are right now, heading into this three-game series against those Clinton Lumber Kings, the Midwest League affiliate of the Seattle Mariners. Well, good Friday to you. It's nice to have the sunshine out. I feel like I'm more alive today than the last couple of days with all this rain.
Happy Cinco de Mayo to you.
Oh, that's right. Cinco de Mayo. We're celebrating here at the ballpark. A special menu tonight if you come out.
And the special menu entails?
I don't remember.
Probably Mexican food, I'm guessing.
Yes. They're gonna put Cinco in the mayo. That's all I know. So that's at the ballpark tonight here in downtown South Bend. We do have tickets available if you'd like to come on out. Bring a blanket, bring a jacket, enjoy South Bend Cubs baseball this evening. Well, one of our listeners 2 days ago brought up a question on Twitter. What would signify a turnaround for the Fighting Irish this year? What type of record would we be able to offer to kind of give our opinion on what a turnaround season would be? We talked about a 9-win season, so we've broken it down a little further. Yesterday we talked about signs of a successful turnaround for the offense, and now let's talk about the defense, which could be a little more complicated, I'm assuming, than breaking down the offense. So let's talk about things to look for in September that could be a sign that things could get a whole lot better quicker than everyone might be anticipating. So let's start with the Fighting Irish defensive line.
Okay.
I feel like we need to start close to the football. That's where you win football games, Eric, is that good old defensive line. You got Mike Elko running the defense. You got Mike Elston back running the defensive lineman. I think it's fair to say during the spring we saw a little difference in the way the defensive line was coached.
Absolutely. You know, the one thing about the defensive line, and we can say this about safeties as well, is there are short-term fixes and long-term fixes because recruiting is going to help both of those positions. But you only had so much recruiting you could do, and Notre Dame lost some players on the defensive line and then was able to recoup a little bit at the end. Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa was a very late addition. Kofi Wardlow, I think, was the absolute last guy that committed to the class. So you did get a couple of really good players potentially at the end of the cycle. And same thing with safety Jordan, Jenmark Heath from San Diego. But what can you do with the cards that you have now? And what Mike Elston did this spring was really coach them up fundamentally. And I think Mike Elston was a very good defensive line coach when he was here before. You know, Keith Gilmore, it was really difficult to measure. I know Sheldon Day was really high on him, but it was difficult to measure his effectiveness because he was so tied to Van Gorder's scheme, Brian Van Gorder's scheme, the defensive coordinator who's not here anymore. But I thought in terms of how much teaching I saw going on, and I was really impressed with what Mike Elston did. So at least maximize what kind of talent you have. Now, what does that need to look like in September? You need certain statistics to show up. And the number one statistic that's got to show up is run defense. Notre Dame in 2012 was 11th. Since then, they have been 70, 72, 72, 72. Run defense is as strong a predictor of a playoff team as anything else. Total defense also works into that. But going all the way back to Notre Dame's national championship team in 88, which was a very good run defense team, I think there's only been a couple that weren't in the top 25. You're talking basically 30 years, Darren, of only, and the two that were outliers weren't much below the 25 mark. But see, run defense sets up everything else for you. If teams can run on you, they can control the clock. If they can run on you, they can get into second and five and third and two rather than second and eight and third and eight. So then your pass defense is worse. So run defense sets the table for everything. Now, your linebackers are part of that, but the defensive line has really got to be good in the middle.
So for it to get better, you take away one of your more productive defensive linemen in Isaac Rochelle, now property of the Los Angeles Chargers, a seventh-round pick last Saturday. So he's gone. It does open the door. You've got Trombetti moving over to the strong side. You've got Dalen Hayes on the weak side. We'll see how he holds up against the run. We really don't know at this point. You got kind of the same guys inside, although Darnell Yule probably is a player that will help.
But you lost Jerron Jones.
You lost Jerron Jones,
in spurts,
too.
He was very good.
I'm not going to put him in the same class as Isaac, but he is a loss for the defensive line. So you kind of have the same cast of characters with a little mixture in and some balancing out. So is it going to be that easy to improve that quickly? Because you look at the month of September, there's some pretty good challenges for this football team against running teams.
Well, the one thing that I think you will see less of is mistakes at the defensive line where, let's say, a defensive end gets pinned inside, and all of a sudden what should have been like a 2 or 3 yard run turns into a 60-yard run. I think you'll see less of those big flaws that expose the defensive lineman. Now, in terms of the interior lineman holding the point, I still have to be sold. Right.
Absolutely.
Now, you have Jerry Tillery and Daniel Cage at the nose guard. You know, Daniel Cage was a good player in terms of holding the point, and yet doesn't have a lot of tackles to show for it. Played on only 8 games, but had 10 tackles last year, Darren. That's a low number for a guy that played as many snaps as Daniel Cage did. Jerry Tillery is a guy that could be really key to this team. If he can play up to his potential, if he can make a leap in his production, then I think you're pretty good at nose guard. You look over at the defensive tackle spot, and your top two in the spring were Jonathan Bonner and Micah Dutredway, and I think between them have less than 8 career tackles. So that's kind of scary. Bonner's been an inside-outside guy, real good athlete, whose athleticism hasn't translated into consistent production. But I think there's hope for Bonner. I think he had a pretty good spring. Mike Adu was basically number two because Elijah Taylor got hurt very early in the spring. They hope to have him in the mix. So when you say, well, gosh, Eric, who can help from the freshmen? That's why you start looking at Darnell Yule and Myron Taigavailoa-Amosa and even Kurt Heinisch, you know, giving those guys a shot to work their way into the two deep. Now, you have some guys like Brandon Tiasum and Pete Makwa, who are guys that are long-term project-type players. I'm still not convinced that they are going to play meaningful downs for Notre Dame, but they could certainly convince me otherwise on the field this fall. I think the freshmen have a better chance to contribute. So that area, you get an injury there, you're kind of in a bad place. If Darnell Yule isn't quite ready to go, that makes it tough, but I think he will be. I think he's going to be an exciting player for Notre Dame for years to come.
This segment, what will be signs of a successful turnaround for the Irish this year, focusing on the defensive side of the football in this segment. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. We need to set a rule. Let's make this rule right now going into fall camp and the season. When we talk about the Rover, are we going to talk about the Rover as a member of the linebacking core or the secondary?
In the Notre Dame ISR 2017 preview, he will be a safety. He will be a member of the secondary, even though he plays at the linebacker level. Most of the bodies that they're recruiting are safeties. And even though, again, he plays closer to the line of scrimmage, I still consider him a secondary player.
I'll save the Rover conversation. I brought that up because you saw Asmar Bilal, a linebacker, play it. You saw Drew Tranquil, a safety, play it. So we've set the rule. Rover's now a secondary member. So
right.
Now
but,
let's
But
ahead.
When you look at the guys they're recruiting, like Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and some of the guys in the 2019 class, Shane Simon, they are big safeties.
So we have a very small linebacking core then. We got two guys, and there's going to be a lot of familiar names. Of course, Niles Morgan is going to be the starter in the middle. Is there going to be a full-time starter and player at the other linebacker spot, or could that be a position that you see personnel changes depending on the situation?
I think they're committed to Greer Martini being a full-time guy there after him being kind of a specialty triple option guy. They saw enough of him outside that framework late last season that they made him a captain. But that doesn't mean Tavon Coney can't overtake him. He didn't in the spring. But Tavon Coney was a pretty productive linebacker. I'd say those are the three guys that you're going to see most of the time. Jonathan Jones right now is backing up Niles Morgan. Jameer Jones is trying to get his nose in there. You know, Josh Barajas seems to be on the periphery looking in. But again, you have a lot of bodies there, and you could actually play Asmar Bilal at that, what they call a buck linebacker now in their new vernacular, which is basically very similar to the position Jalen Smith played when he was here. But boy, if you could play it like Jalen Smith did, you call it the Jalen linebacker.
Yeah, that's right.
But Asmar Bilal's a possibility there. I think they're going to be pretty good at linebacker in terms of run fits, in terms of stopping the run, which was the first part of this equation. You know, we'll go to pass rush in a minute, but as far as run stoppers, I feel really good with Martini and Niles, with Coney and Niles, with really Bilal and Niles, whoever you put in there with Niles Morgan. And I think this scheme and this coordinator and Clark Lea as the linebackers coach, I think is going to bring Niles Morgan full circle. When he came to Notre Dame, I thought he was one of those players that Notre Dame had to get. They had to get an elite linebacker in that class. They weren't in his top five originally when he announced the top five. They were able to work their way in and get him. And I think this coaching staff is going to bring out that kind of linebacker. We're going to see him be considered an elite guy nationally. Not an All-American necessarily, but a guy that gets
difference
national
maker.
Mention. Yeah, difference maker.
Let's leave the secondary aside. Let's go ahead and go to the pass rush. And since we're doing a segment called What Will Be Signs of a Successful Turnaround, the first thing you think of, well, Dalen Hayes is going to be let free.
Right.
He's going to play. But if you look at Wake Forest, the linebacking core could be a big part of getting pressure on the quarterback and maybe even the Rover.
Yeah, at Wake Forest, they got a lot of sacks from a guy that played a little inside, played mostly outside, an edge pass rusher. They got double-digit sacks from him. The guy that was second on the team in sacks was their middle linebacker, and he physically and skill set wise is very similar to Niles Morgan. And Niles led the team in sacks last year in the old scheme. And then you had the Rover very involved in pass rush. They had pass rush from a lot of different people, but the big three were the Rover, the middle linebacker, and one of the edge players, who again sometimes kicked inside, played inside very well, and was able to create a pass rush inside. When you look at where it's going to come from with Notre Dame, I think you could say Dalen Hayes. You would say Niles Morgan. Mm-hmm. You would say whoever the Rover happens to be on that given day. If you had to go a fourth place to look for it, I would say maybe Darnell Ewell if he's on the field as much as I think he could be. You know, the Jay Hayes Trombetti linebacker, the bigger or defensive end, I think you'll get a little bit from them. I think you'll get about what you got from Isaac Rochelle last year. But Dalen Hayes is going to be really counted on, and he certainly is looking more and more the part. Now, again, remember, they invested a lot in getting him up to speed by throwing against Mike McGlinchey every day during the spring. Yeah. Then when we got to the spring game, they said, guess what? You don't have to go against McGlinchey much today. We're going to flip you to the other side and have you go against a guy that was in your recruiting class, the highest-ranked offensive player in your recruiting class, which was Tommy Kramer. And he did very well, Dalen Hayes did, in that situation.
Finally, in this segment, what will be signs of a successful turnaround focusing on the Irish defense today? Why don't we talk about the safeties first? Because I think more than anything else, it may be difficult to find signs unless they just play so much better than we anticipate. You know, that's the area of the football team with so many question marks in the blue goal game. There were a couple of times where, you know, the receivers got behind that last line of defense, which is awfully concerning. So how do you find signs of a successful turnaround when you think about the safety position?
Well, they could certainly be helped by the pass rush. You know, when you look at the way this defense is constructed, it's constructed to get turnovers, especially when you are having an offense that's going to play at high tempo. You do not want the defense on the field for 74 plays. You want them on the field for 60 plays or less than 60. And so you're counting on some turnovers. Well, that is your secondary working in concert with your pass rush. So the good news, Darren, is you feel good about the corners holding up in that situation. The scary news is the safety position just needs to continue to evolve. The good news there is during the spring they came out with two starting candidates that they're going to invest reps in August, and that's Jalen Elliott at strong safety and Nick Coleman at free safety. Right. I don't know that that's going to change going into the fall unless there's some regression on their part. I think the assumption is that these guys will be able to bump it up another level through August training camp, through their player development. You know, right now, you know, that's where you would attack Notre Dame. You know, you would try to get some mismatches on the safeties. You try to get Nick Coleman on your tight end, Nick Coleman on a big receiver. And I'm not picking on Nick, but other teams will.
Yes, they will.
They will test him. And he's going to have to show that he can handle that. You know, he is a fast guy. He's a guy with, you know, corner speed, but he has to be physical and he has to be really, really smart. You know, I think he's got a great attitude, and I saw a lot of growth in him during the spring, but you need to see as much in August for them to feel comfortable about that position.
If I'm looking for signs of a successful turnaround on defense, it's going to come down to creating turnovers. That's the easiest way for the average football fan to see improvement, and that is keeping points off the scoreboard and turning the football over. And with the playmaking abilities at the cornerback position, with just a little pressure on the quarterback, those are the type of plays that can turn around football games. And a team that could be going in for a score, Notre Dame's corners make a play and go the other way and score. Those are the type of things that would be a big boost for this football team that has a first-year starting quarterback.
I agree, Darren. And the, I guess the good sign about that is Mike Elko was able to do that really consistently, both at his last couple years at Bowling Green and all three of the years at Wake Forest. So it wasn't like there was a certain person that, you know, when you look at Notre Dame's, you know, 2014, Jalen Smith seemed to cause a lot of the turnovers. But the last 2 years, and he did play in 2015, they were 109th and 104th in turnovers forced. They just didn't even seem to, for example, when Notre Dame played Boston College, you would see those guys tackling hard and also whacking at the ball, trying to knock it out. I mean, they were bullies. And I mean, these are like 2- and 3-star guys, recruits, but I'll tell you what, they were tough and they fundamentally knew how to get the ball out of your hands. And that's what Notre Dame was learning this spring. You saw a lot more of that. Now, you don't just whack at the ball and let the guy keep running. I mean, you have to wrap him up and then you, second guy comes in and whacks at the ball. And we did see some of that in the spring. So I think that's a good sign.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat, live from Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, Indiana. Cubs baseball tonight at 7:35 against Clinton. That wraps up our segment on what will be signs of a successful turnaround for the Irish as we focused on the defense today. Coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about Brian Kelly, an article that was written about him by the Associated Press today. And I think there were two quotes that stood out more than anything else. We'll tell you what he said, and we'll talk about his quotes coming up in just a couple of moments on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and Legacy Heating and Air on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Thank you, Abby. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat is back. 27 minutes in front of 6 o'clock, along with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Quick update on Major League Baseball. Kyle Schwarber, Chris Bryant with solo home runs today for the Chicago Cubs. They're taking on the New York Yankees at Wrigley Field today. The Cubs led 2-0 going to the top of the ninth inning. Wade Davis not able to go today. So Hector Rondon went for the save. A couple of base runners got on. And Rondon, with 2 strikes and 2 outs, gave up a 3-run home run to Brett Gardner. And the Yankees now lead the Cubs 3-2. In the bottom of the ninth inning, Addison Russell got aboard on an error. He's at second base with nobody out, and I'm sorry to be critical, but how does Joe Maddon not bunt with Jason Hayward at the plate with Aroldis Chapman on the mound in a lefty-lefty matchup? He elected to let him swing, and 4 pitches later, Hayward struck out, and the runner is still at second base with 1 out. You agree?
I agree with you, Darren. I think you should be managing.
Really?
Yes.
Well, then let's do it.
You could announce and manage at the same time. Just
like a player manager?
Boom your voice out to there. Didn't Hawk Harrelson, like, wasn't he a GM for a while?
Yeah, he fired Tony La Russa. Oops.
Oh, wow.
Oops. He gone.
Yeah, I guess.
I think Tony landed on his feet okay.
Yeah.
Hawk Harrelson fired a Hall of Fame manager with one of the top 5 best win totals in Major League Baseball history. Oops. Well, he had a bad day at the office. So Chapman is just throwing heat, obviously, right now. As the Cubs are trying to get the tying run home, Wilson Contreras at the plate. Russell at second base, 1 out. Yankees 3, Cubs 2. This would be a tough one to lose for the Cubs after a pretty good performance today by Kyle Hendricks. 5 1/3 scoreless innings, and Rondon comes in and gives up the 2-strike, 2-out home run to Brett Gardner. So we'll let you know how the Cubs and the Yankees wrap up at Wrigley Field today. All right, let's get to a story that the Associated Press came out with today, Eric. And it was written by Ralph Russo, an AP college football writer, and it centered around Notre Dame head football coach Brian Kelly. There were a couple of quotes that stood out in the piece. I'm just going to read one, and then we'll get to the two best ones. I think this one, since we're talking baseball a little bit, when Brian Kelly was talking about revamping everything and having an off year last year, he kind of used a baseball thought. Coach Kelly said, quote, "I use the analogy, if you're a really good hitter and you're in the major leagues and you have 1 year when you fall below, you make a couple of adjustments, you take some BP, you have a good offseason, and you start hitting again. I'm going to hit again. I know how to coach," end quote. Hopefully he was not referencing Jason Hayward.
You're bad.
But in terms of reinventing himself, I don't know if he had to reinvent himself necessarily, but it was reinventing the Notre Dame program and how things were done as an entire coaching staff.
Oh, I think he had to reinvent himself.
You think so, a little
bit?
Yeah,
absolutely. In what way? Well, just the way that he went about things, that he had to be more involved in the whole part of the program, that he couldn't trust the defensive coordinator to just run things, and he couldn't trust just the strength and conditioning coach, because those things deteriorated when he was busy doing the things that he was designed to do, which was coach quarterbacks, coach the offense, and be the figurehead for Notre Dame. And I think we're going to see less of that from him. He's still going to do it, but we're going to see less of that.
But that's not having the right people in the right positions, obviously. If you have to babysit those things, like he had to help the defense, that's just not having the right guy, defensive coordinator, last year.
Well, I would agree with you, but I think there's a philosophy, too, in that I think Brian Kelly at one point got too enamored with getting guys to the NFL, which is weird because he came in and it was the opposite of that. But at one point, I think the lure of Van Gorder was that he had been in the NFL and they were going to run an NFL-style defense. And it definitely didn't work on the college level with college offenses. And I think he got back to hiring somebody that was a really good college defensive coordinator.
Agreed.
That stressed fundamentals. I do think there was an internal change in Brian Kelly, because I think he was a little bit, I think it was really hard for him to believe that Longo had deteriorated.
Yeah.
As a strength and conditioning coach. It was hard for me to believe.
I will say this. One thing that Brian did reinvent himself on that I should have mentioned is the fact he's spending more time with the players. He got up early with them for workouts, something he normally didn't do, and he feels like he can have now a better relationship with the players because they almost feel like they know him now more than just being the guy standing at the front of the room and setting the agenda for the day or talking about something, rather than those one-on-one personal conversations. So I think that was a huge plus.
Well, I think another reinvention is him giving up play calling. I mean, that's huge for Brian Kelly. I mean, yeah, we know Mike Denbrock called some plays and so forth, called the plays. But Brian Kelly handing it over to somebody that is basically a stranger, a guy that's done it 1 year, it's really going to be an interesting fall from that standpoint. Again, given we've talked about this, I've been hammering this on the radio, I'll do it again, 10 top 40 defenses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be a real test to see if he wants to, you know, use that driver's ed break with Chip Long if things aren't going well in a game. I think he's committed to doing that. But there's a lot of differences. I think Brian Kelly really took a look at himself. And I don't know that that would have happened had they lucked into some of those 8-4 victories that, let me say that again, had they lucked into a few victories right at the end of the games and gone 8-4, because that wouldn't have been a very good 8-4 football team, Darren, last year. Don't you agree?
Agreed. Before we get to more on this article, as John Sterling would say, the Yankees win. Yankees just held off the Cubs 3-2 at Wrigley Field. Aroldis Chapman picked up the save. Tough loss for the Cubs. They give up a 3-run home run with 2 outs and 2 strikes in the top of the 9th inning. And they got Addison Russell on second base with nobody out. But Chapman picks up the save for the Bronx Bombers, 3-2, the final score. Now back to the article from the Associated Press on Brian Kelly. He was asked about being on the hot seat. Here is one of his quotes. Quote, how many times will the administration allow you to have $3.5 million in contracts after a 4-8 season? I think that was a pretty good referendum on how they feel I'm the right guy for the job, end quote. And I think he's exactly right. You don't invest in the program if you don't believe in Brian Kelly. You could wait and bring in a new coach and then invest that money. So I think he's exactly right. I think that's a sign the decision makers at Notre Dame are fully believers in Brian Kelly, and history shows he doesn't have losing seasons very often.
That's why, again, everybody wants, and I'm actually going to write about this for Sunday. You gave me the idea from what does a turnaround season look like. Everybody wants a magic number. They want to say, what's the magic win total? And when the administration is investing in Brian Kelly, they're not looking at a specific number. They're looking at progress, and they're looking at recruiting. And I think that's what they want to see. Well, what number is that going to turn out to be? It's hard to put a number on it. Here's why. Last year of the Jerry Faust era, Notre Dame went 5-6, and you just felt like it was never going to happen for Jerry.
Air's out of the balloon.
Lou Holtz comes in and goes 5-6 in his first season. I can't tell you how different 5-6 in 86 felt from 5-6 in 85. It felt like the beginning of something special. So that number, having a magic number, I don't think Jack Swarbrick has one in his pocket. I'll guarantee you, 4-8 is an unmagic number, and they would have to eat a lot of contracts. But, you know, 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, you know, Brian Kelly has really tried to focus on the process and then let that determine what the number's going to be. I still can't tell you. You know, we kind of said 8-4, 9-3, maybe 10-2. You know, and then what if Notre Dame ends up playing the number one schedule in the country? What if they end up playing the worst, you know, a terrible schedule? Last year's schedule wasn't that hard when you got through it. At least, you know, Michigan State was a 3-9 team. That looked like a really big game early in the year and so forth. You know, Miami was good at the end of the year. They weren't good when Notre Dame played them. It was so when you look at these teams next year, it looks like a pretty formidable schedule, but we'll see. But, yeah, the magic number, there isn't one. Yep. There needs to be progress. There needs to be really good recruiting. And so far, Brian Kelly has been doing that with the recruiting.
We got to be quick because we got to get to break, and a guest is coming up. But there's another AP article where it talks about basically the interview. Did you want to read the quote about the perception, the critics, that he blames players? All right, let me read it real quick. I demand, I never demean them. We have a high level of accountability. We're very demanding, and the players expect me to be honest with them on a daily basis. They would say that that's Coach Kelly being Coach Kelly. If he came in and sugarcoated it, he's full of it. That's just not him. But what I will change this year is that I can't be honest with assessment of players to the media, totally honest, because it's portrayed as throwing players under the bus, being disloyal to a player. They don't know the relationship with the player. Based upon what happened last year and the fallout that occurred from other media sources, it doesn't do the university, it doesn't do the program any good for me to be forthright when it comes to those kinds of assessments of our players, end quote. I have a problem with one thing. They don't have the relationship with the player. Tell me who they is. Who's they? It's not Eric and I. But they puts all of us in the media in one pot. And I don't like that. So if there's two or three or four people that are doing it, if there's a couple of people do it, call them out. But it makes all of us look like we're a bunch of jerks that we're saying all these things about the players when we are not.
Right. And I think he could have identified the people and it wouldn't have done him any good. But, I mean, it's the fine bombs of the world. It's the people that are aggregators and so forth. You know, I think there's people on our beat that aren't always comfortable with the way Brian Kelly is in the post game. And
why not? That's not their job to think about that. He's got to be who he is. Deal with it. Adjust.
Well, I think a lot of it.
I'm not saying you. You understand that.
Yeah, but what I think, Darren, is a lot of it is because they're 4-8. If he were 12-0 and he was having the same assessment of the play, oh, he's brilliant. I mean, I saw it with so many different coaches. Bob Knight, you know, when he was winning, hey, he's tough. You know, when he wasn't winning as much, then he became abusive. You looked at Tyrone Willingham. When he first came in and they were winning, you know, he's so serene on the sidelines. He's so cerebral. And then as they started to lose games, he's not fiery enough. It's the same guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's unfortunate that Brian Kelly's going down that road. I understand it. I don't like it. And I hope kind of behind the scenes I can still find out what he thinks about certain players.
Sure. I just don't like the word they when it's used in a quote. That word bothers me.
Okay.
Don't ever do it again, Eric.
Well, you know what they say.
Exactly. Who is it?
Yeah.
That's like when the player says, well, Nolan says that we could win this game. Well, who's that person?
Well, I think some of it is just where we are with journalism today, too. If Brian Kelly were doing this 15 years ago,
Not a problem.
Yeah, I don't think it's the problem
Zero problem today.
I think, again, it's the record and where we are with journalism. And right now, Notre Dame is a hot-button topic nationally.
Quick timeout. Sports Beat continues next on WSBT. Thanks, Abby. 11 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you from Four Winds Field. Joining us right now, longtime broadcaster Dean Huppert. Now he's going to, I think, do something that's perfect for him. He's been so great covering high school sports through the years, and now he is going to take over as the new athletic director at Mishawaka High School. Dean, it's Darren. Congratulations on the new position.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Darren, and thanks for having us on tonight.
You bet. So when you started thinking about becoming an athletic director, again, I just mentioned how much you love high school sports. How good of a fit is this for you?
You know, I think it's as good a fit as I could ever have. I've lived in Mishawaka for the last 27 years. I know Caveman Athletics. You start to think about some of the traditions, and people don't know, but on Friday nights I would go out to Steele Stadium and cover the games, but on Friday mornings to try to get some exercise and to try to get my head ready for high school football, I would sneak in the back entrance there and run those stands. I mean, it's a place that has cement bleachers, and when you go out there and you'll get a workout, trust me, you're going to get a workout. You're going to get your exercise, but you're also going to think about the tradition and think about some of the great games that have been out there, and it got me ready for those nights. So that may be something that I have to continue, and now I've got I actually have keys to the place, so I can go in there and not sneak in anymore. Just thought about that. That's pretty cool.
That's right. You're legal now.
You know, Dean, this is Eric Hansen.
Exactly.
It's going to be your job to keep out those people that are sneaking in the back gate.
That's exactly right. And if we can get them in there, we may just lock the doors after they get in there, and that way we'll have more people cheering for our program.
There you go. Dean, I'm curious, with the career change, what adjustments do you anticipate? I'm sure some of them you won't know till you actually get on the job. And being around high school, there's going to be some natural crossover that's going to make it easy. But in terms of adjusting to a new career, what are some of the places that you think you might have a learning curve with that?
Well, you know, they actually asked me that in my interview. And when they ask you, tell me about your weaknesses and how do you plan to overcome those? That's a pretty daunting question. And I told the person who asked me that in the interview a couple days later, I said, you know, when you asked me that, it stuck with me for 2 or 3 days, because there's a lot that you don't think of. There's a lot of ways as an athletic director to deal with parents and to deal with coaches, and they want me to be a program developer. But one great thing that I have, and there's a number of things that I have going for me, is that I've got a Hall of Famer who's willing to mentor me. And I know Jimmy Aldrich right now is busy with the season, and he's got until the end of May and into June for the sports, but he said, you know, in the month of June, let's get together. Any questions you have, anything I can do to make it easier. There's nobody who loves Mishawaka more than Jim Aldrich, and he's got the experience, and he's been through some of those things. And what I told the person who asked me the question about the weaknesses, I said I thought about it for a couple days, and I've really looked at it hard and long. And I've been working in the administration building for about a month now and helping with a camp project that they had going on. And now that we have something on MishawakaSchools.com/camps, we have all our camps in line. But I said, what I've learned about Mishawaka in this past month is that I look around to my left and to my right, and people are there to answer questions. I've heard so many times, and you wonder how people are going to treat you. Hey, how can I help? If there's anything I need, here's my card, here's my cell phone. Right. If I can be there, if I don't have the answer, I know the guy who does. So don't be afraid to ask. And that's going to be a tremendous help, because make no mistake, this is going to be a community effort. This is something that the school system wants to work forward. There's already a lot of great things in place. If we can take things to another level, make them better, create a little more excitement, and start that process at the kindergarten, at the seventh grade level, started down there. We don't want them to get to ninth grade and say, hey, we want to make you a tremendous athlete, and we're going to throw these guys as our coaches now. We want to work with them a little bit earlier.
Dean Huppert, the new AD at Mishawaka High School, our guest. I don't know if you know, Dean, but I'm actually Bart Curtis's agent, so we need to talk about his contract at some point. You have to give me a call. But seriously, but you've got a great football coach to deal with and a great athletic department. You know, the great thing about Mishawaka, from what I understand, compared to some of the other schools that are struggling, getting all their freshman and junior varsity teams full. I think there have been some varsity problems throughout the NIC or more local. But Mishawaka seems, Dean, to be in pretty good shape in that area, that there's been pretty good turnouts in the sports.
You know, there really has. And when you talk about building programs, you don't go to Bart Curtis and say, hey, coach, this is what I think we need to do. You go to a guy like that and say, how have you done it? How can we do that across the board? We've got 19 sports here. You've done it the right way. You look at Steve Anderson and say, okay, you're down in the middle schools. You're developing. How do you do that for the volleyball program, and how do you work there? I mean, there's two more Hall of Famers that I can go to and say, okay, I may not have the answer to this, but how would you deal with this? And when you look at what Bart's done at Mishawaka, I mean, he had success at New Prairie, and he's taken that success to another level at a bigger schedule when you come to Mishawaka. New Prairie was still in the NSC when he was over there. He comes to the NIC, and boom, he's another success story. I mean, you talk about things that they have, and I've looked at it, and I talked to him as a reporter, but to be able to talk to him and hear some of the things that he does on the outside, we had a nice conversation last night just about things like that, and how some of the other people deal with parents, and how his program sets it up with the coach, with the player, and make sure that there's a conversation, that it's not just, hey, this is the way it is, and this is how it's going to be. Right. It's got to be communication. There's got to be collaboration. And you want to build high expectations, but you need to talk to those kids. You need to talk to those parents. And he's done that. I mean, you talk about a guy who's got respect from the community and from his players and from his coaches. They're coming back year after year saying, I love you, coach. And that's what you want out of all your coaches.
Well, Dean, I'll cue you from your media days. I got about 30 seconds for this answer. You probably need a couple more minutes to answer this, but I would just be your thoughts early on. I know you got to work this out, but as great as that football program is, the playing surface is not the greatest at Mishawaka. Is that one of those things that needs to be a top priority, trying to figure out a solution to that?
I can't wait for you to get out there in August and September, Darren, because we're going to have a new surface, a new drainage system, and new lights. It's going to be a football field that all of Mishawaka can be proud of. The community came through with the referendum, and that's something that everybody's known for a long time. You know what? Mishawaka's on the move, and it's going to start right there, and people are going to come in and be very, very proud of what we have, and those football players are going to be proud to be on that surface.
Boy, you were quickly.
28 seconds, exciting. Is that all right?
That's perfect. I love it. Hey, Dean, congratulations on the new position. We look forward to talking to you at Steel Stadium and the Cave and all the great Mishawaka facilities.
Well, you guys have done an amazing job. You both have been great friends to me through the years, and we can't wait for you to come out and cover the positive stories like you always have, because there's a lot of great things that are going to be happening, and I hopefully will be able to point those out to you.
Yep. Dean, thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, have a great night, guys.
You too. Dean Huppert, the new AD at Mishawaka High School. Couple of minutes in front of the top of the hour. Quick break. Eric will tell you what's coming up in the Tribune next on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Al Lesser is in the house tonight, and he is covering the South Bend Cubs versus the Clinton Lumber Kings. I'll have something on Notre Dame football brewing for Sunday's paper and much more.
Eric, thank you. We're at the top of the hour, and this is WSBT South Bend.
This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on your home of the Irish. 960 AM and 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Here's a home run ball. Going for it is Fuller. He's out there. He catches it. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
Jackson with a spectacular spin move. And now the no-look pass to Zach August for the two-handed slam.
Adios. Two-run home run, Gleyber Torres.
Kizer looks, timing pattern.
Caught. Touchdown, Notre Dame. Corey Hunter Jr.
Number one goes down at Notre Dame again.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
7 minutes after 6 o'clock, SportsBeat continues on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and by Legacy Heating and Air. Sean back at our WSBT studios. I'm Darren with the South Bend Cubs at Four Winds Field. It is Clinton and South Bend tonight. Game one of a three-game series. First pitch tonight at 7:35. Tomorrow night, 7:05. And then Sunday, a 2:05 first pitch as the Cub and Mariner affiliate square off at Four Winds Field. All three games on 96.1 FM WSBT. Why don't we just take care of some baseball business real quick. The Yankees today rallied to beat the Cubs 3-2 at Wrigley Field. Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, solo home runs for Chicago. And it was 2-0 Cubs moving to the top of the ninth inning. Wade Davis not available. Hector Rondon going for the save, allowed a couple of base runners, and had Brett Gardner down, a ball and two strikes with two outs, and Gardner hit a slider down and in. And you know what lefties do with those? They deposit those down and in pitches into the right field bleachers, and that's exactly what happened. Gardner's three-run home run put the Yankees in front 3-2. Aroldis Chapman, a familiar face for Cub fans, entered the ball game in the bottom of the ninth and gave up a base runner as Edison Russell reached on a fielding error by Chase Headley at 30, ended up at second base. And I thought the key moment in the inning was Joe Maddon elected to, A, let Jason Hayward hit against Aroldis Chapman, a lefty-lefty matchup, and Jason doesn't hit any lefty well, let alone the most dominant left-hander in Major League Baseball. And I thought he would at least bunt if he was going to send him to the plate. Never did, and Hayward struck out, and the Cubs failed to score. So the Yankees steal game one of that three-game series by a final score of 3-2, and Kyle Hendricks robbed of a victory today. 5 1/3 innings, didn't give up a run, but has to walk away with a no decision after the Gardner three-run home run off Rondon.
Tough one. I was listening to Pat Hughes on the radio there, Darren, for probably from about the sixth. Well, I guess, yeah, it was about the sixth inning on. Cubs were 152-0 entering the ninth inning when they had the lead at least 2-0 over the last three seasons. And
no,
you mentioned,
kidding.
Yeah, and you mentioned Wade Davis. He had pitched in each of the last three games, and he pitched yesterday in a non-save situation. It was tied in the ninth, but of course he ends up, you know, they get the win in 13, so it's kind of a pick which one you want, I guess. He still hasn't given up a run this season, didn't get to pitch today because he'd pitched in three straight.
So the Chicago media might be asking Joe Maddon about his use of his closer once again.
Yep. And that's kind of what I was thinking, because like when I'm watching that yesterday, because we were in here when the game was winding down yesterday because it had gone to extra innings, and it wasn't a save situation. So Davis is in there, tie ball game. So, yeah, he gets them to the 10th inning, but at the same time, it's that high leverage situation. It's still a situation where you can't get to the 10th if you don't get through the 9th. But when you look back at it now, you really would obviously have liked to have had Wade Davis in there in the 9th inning today.
Well, it's always the decision for a National League manager when you're at home. You want to use your closer.
Right.
Even in a non-save situation, if you got the middle of the lineup coming up in the 10th inning, there's a good spot to use your closer to try to shut the door to allow your offense to come up and win it in the bottom of the inning. But since he had thrown 2 days in a row, I don't know how the other guys lined up, but I'm sure the Chicago media asked Joe Madden about that during his post-game commentary, especially after Rondon didn't get it done. And he's probably thinking, I've got Rondon. He has saved games. I have confidence in him. And I have a feeling that's probably what Joe Madden talked about in his post-game comment. But managers, they are hired to be criticized and ridiculed because the game of baseball, everything's basically a 50-50 coin flip, and it didn't work out for the Cubbies today as they lost to the Yankees by a score of 3-2. With that, we now transition to, I guess, what Joe Madden just faced from the media there in Chicago, rapid fire.
That's right. It is rapid fire time, and I'm sure Joe is loving his rapid fire. I'm saying sarcastically, of course, right now. I hope you like our rapid fire more than Joe is liking his right now, probably. Darren?
You know, he handles everything pretty well.
He does.
I have a feeling we're going to enjoy it a whole lot more.
He does, and like you said, I mean, really, there's some irony in the fact that Aroldis Chapman gets the last three outs for the Yankees when he was the one that, if everything had backfired in early November last year, it's the, like you alluded to, the same sort of situation with Wade Davis having to go to the closer over and over again. All right, let's do some rapid fire here. Let's start off with some football, Darren. So, DeShone Kizer, the subject of this one. Without coming right out and explicitly comparing Kizer to Ben Roethlisberger, Browns head coach Hugh Jackson at least indirectly compared Kizer to Big Ben on a Cleveland radio station yesterday. And I will read the quote to you for context so that you have it, okay? So this is Hugh Jackson, the Cleveland Browns head coach. Quote, I don't know that I've coached a guy with this kind of skill set, but he's a big, powerful man, so I know he's going to get compared to another guy on another team in our division. I'm not going to talk about, and now it's in brackets, Roethlisberger, because he's that big and he has that kind of arm. He's very mobile. So again, I don't like to compare players, and I know people will, but he's not going to, but he's got to come in, rather, and do what he can and be the best version of him, and that's what we're going to allow him to do, end quote. So, is Jackson's even veiled but not veiled Kizer Roethlisberger comparison fair or foul, Darren?
I got to say foul because you just can't compare a guy who's never taken a down or a snap in the NFL to a guy who's won two Super Bowls. We just had the same conversation a couple of weeks ago about Kizer, you know, making the reference
exactly
that Pat Mahomes, I can throw an out better than him. You just want to stay away from comparison. So now as the head coach, you have tried to put those two individuals in the same sentence, which A, is absolutely unfair to DeShone Kizer, first off, to put that on his plate and to alter the expectations of the fans in Cleveland. I just let it play out and allowed DeShone Kizer to define himself rather than the head coach trying to compare to define DeShone Kizer.
Especially when you just look at, and you kind of said it there, the guy hasn't even gone to rookie mini camp yet. And it's just like what you said, Kizer making his own comparisons, whether it was to Pat Mahomes or the Tom Brady, Cam Newton stuff. There's no reason for Kizer's head coach to compare a rookie quarterback who hasn't even put on the uniform yet to a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame, especially considering they're in the same division and they're going to see him twice a year every year. And I know that, yeah, there's some physical comparisons and all that. Let's wait and see. I mean, the media and fans always going to make comparisons, so there's no reason for coaches and players to give us in the media and to give fans more fodder, because that stuff is going to that comparisons are going to come up in one way or another. There's no reason to spoon feed it to everybody.
I hope he stays healthier than Ben Roethlisberger.
That'd be nice too. All right, another football question. A week after the Bears drafted Mitch Trubisky, former Bears quarterback Jay Cutler is now officially the newest member of Fox's NFL broadcast team.
You're going to do this to me again, aren't you?
Toss up, Darren. Whose 2017 debut are you more anticipating, Trubisky's or Cutler's?
Trubisky.
Really?
Jay Cutler doesn't exist for me. As a Bronco fan, he said some things.
He's dead to you.
As a Denver Bronco, I'm not going to forgive him. It's my right to hold that against him, and I could care less. I think he's a very boring individual, so I just don't feel like that he's going to be that great in the broadcast booth.
Okay.
I hope I'm wrong.
All right. Well, personally, I'm more curious to see what Cutler brings to the booth. He's going to be working in a three-man booth with Kevin Burkhart doing the play-by-play. Charles Davis is going to be the other analyst. And so just the fact that it's a three-man booth is kind of a unique thing as well. Not completely unique, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, but I think having Davis in there would potentially help Cutler because it'll allow him to get comfortable. He doesn't necessarily have to jump in on every play. He can sort of make some observations, things like that, things that Davis is doing, sort of cut his teeth slowly, figure things out as he goes. I actually saw an interesting comment from Burkhart today where he said he thinks Cutler's sarcastic humor will help him in the booth. And I have to say, unless maybe you've some of those quotes going back to Denver, that's a side of him that I don't know that we've necessarily seen either. Sarcastic humor from Jay Cutler.
I have not noticed that. Hopefully I'll be impressed. But three-man booths are too noisy for football.
Yeah.
It can work in other sports, but there's just not enough time in between plays. It can get very, very noisy. It takes a very special crew to pull that off, and you're bringing in a guy that's never broadcasted, so I have very low expectations that it'll work.
And by the way, it looks like we'll actually get to see both Cutler and Trubisky at the same time because that Fox team of Cutler, Burkhart, and Davis, they're going to be calling the Bears' third preseason game at Tennessee. So we would most likely see Trubisky on the field since it's a preseason game, whether or not he goes into the season as the starter. So
I'm just glad my team's in the AFC. He's broadcasting on an NFC channel.
Don't have to worry about it. All right. We're doing a little rapid fire Budweiser's weekday sports feed on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Let's switch to some basketball here, Darren. I heard an interesting comment from Isaiah Thomas today. Now, I'm talking about the original Isaiah Thomas, the Indiana Hoosier, former Bad Boy Detroit Piston Isaiah Thomas, not the current Boston Celtics. So he said today on ESPN that he would have won at least two more championships if he was playing in today's game because he says it favors smaller players like him more, whereas he says in his day the rules favored the big man more. So, do you buy or sell Thomas's theory that he would have won at least two more titles playing under today's rules?
Well, if Tom Crean's the head coach, no.
not in college, in the NBA.
Oh, the NBA. Okay. You know, I don't know. That's kind of apples and oranges almost still. I know the game is a little different, but I'm just not buying that. I don't see enough evidence that's going to make me believe that he would have won anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, they won a couple of championships. They got it done with the Bad Boys. Good for him, but under today's rules, I can't imagine that the Bad Boys, with the way they played, that type of physical play is trying to be eliminated from the game. So I don't see how.
Well, and that favored the Bad Boys as well, because Mahorn and Lambeer and all that. I mean, that favored them as much as it favored anybody. Yeah.
So I guess my thought is, okay, under his scenario, it's better for the guards with the way the game is played today. But I think they would be hurt by the fact that physical play is trying to be taken out of the game, so I don't think they'd be as good, so I got to say no.
Yeah, to me, and I have to sell it as well, to me it's just another, the old man, back in my day, things were so much tougher, you know, that whole thing, the revisionist history line of thinking. They got a couple of NBA championships, they lost one in the finals to the Lakers that went seven, but I went back and looked, and there was kind of the run-up for the Pistons, where they had to go through Boston, then they finally get to those finals, and then at the end of that run, they had to go and play Chicago, whereas Chicago was the one that was getting knocked off by the Pistons. But it's not like Michael Jordan and those Bulls teams weren't. Michael Jordan was a freaking guard. I mean, come on, you know? So they lose to Jordan and the Bulls, and they also lost in the first or second round of the playoffs four times. So when Isaiah Thomas was there. So to me, it's just a big sell. I just think it's him trying to rationalize, again, back in my day and all that kind of stuff.
I would remind him that if it's better to be a guard today, how many championships would a Michael Jordan won then?
Yeah.
The rules have been more toward the guard, as he's saying.
Right.
Maybe Mr. Thomas has zero. Who knows?
And I mean, I can buy it to an extent because, yeah, the Celtics weren't the most athletic team. Bird and McHale and Parrish and all those guys, Walton and all that. But I'm not buying it. All right.
Nope.
Former UCLA guard Lonzo Ball and his ever-present dad, LaVar. I'm sure you've heard about this. They've rolled out their Big Baller shoe line, which comes with a $495 per pair price tag. Shaquille O'Neal and others have criticized the price, and LaVar's response is, if you can't afford them, you're not a big baller. So, Darren, how baller are you?
I don't like paying $69 for a pair of shoes.
That's exactly it.
I mean, I can buy seven pair under that scenario.
Right.
The whole ball situation is extremely unbelievable how this dad wants to be such a part of the limelight living through his kids. It's remarkable. And suppose that the logo is even stolen.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. They're Ohio State or something suing for copyright infringement.
So I can't believe that anybody would spend that much on those shoes. Now, if it's a Michael Jordan, Air Jordan shoe, that's a different thing because the label means so much to people. People will buy for the opportunity to have that logo on their shoe. But how many people in this country want to have the ball logo on their shoe? I just don't think it's that big a deal.
Yeah, and that's what I don't get is I don't see in what universe LaVar Ball thinks these things are going to sell, because for the biggest thing in this whole, it would be one thing if, as you just said, if Michael Jordan decided he's going to put out a commemorative shoe and it's going to have this high price tag or whatever, but that's Michael Jordan. It's like There's a certain level and a certain cachet that comes with Michael Jordan, whether it's him or Magic Johnson, whoever it happens to be, a legend. This is a rookie who hasn't played a minute in the NBA, hasn't even been drafted yet for that matter. So to me, the only people who could actually afford a $495 price tag, and by the way, just the shower slides are $220, even that's more than a real pair of shoes. I mean, do you think that a 10-year veteran in the NBA is going to drop almost $500 for a pair of shoes that a rookie is out there schlepping? I just don't see it. I don't see who the market is for buying these things.
Neither do I.
All right. After a 28-year run on ESPN, The Sports Reporters is going to say goodbye this Sunday with its final airing Sunday morning. So toss up, Darren. In its prime, which was the better ESPN show, SportsCenter or The Sports Reporters?
Definitely SportsCenter in its heyday. I don't like the form of SportsCenter today.
There's
too many non-sports-related things now being done. That's a turnoff to me. Sports writers, it was okay at times. John Saunders, the late John Saunders, I thought was nice hosting the show. I learned who Mike Lupica was on that show, but there was just a lot of crustiness on that show, in my opinion.
There was, especially more recently, I think, because back when it started, when Dick Schaap was the host,
yeah.
And that's when I started watching both of these in college, and just the golden age, especially for SportsCenter and ESPN back then, with Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann, Rich Eisen, and Jack Edwards. Is Jack Edwards still the Boston Bruins play-by-play guy?
Yes, he is.
He left SportsCenter to do that. Stuart Scott. Even Chris Berman was good back then before he became a parody of himself, I think. But the Sports Reporters kind of launched the trend of beat reporters and columnists having a voice on broadcast and now the digital media forums. And when Schaap was there, I thought it was great because even sports talk radio wasn't huge back then. So you were still kind of getting some fresh opinions that you never really got to get, especially on the national level with, like you mentioned, Lupica, Mitch Albom, Bob Ryan, those kind of guys. Yeah, it did verge into crusty. And once Schaap passed away, and then after John Saunders passed away as well, it's really just the oversaturation of the Skip Baylesses and the Stephen A. Smiths and all that
exactly
kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and I just think Lupica now, And I haven't watched it nearly as much. Lupica just really would rather hear himself talk than get someone else's opinion most of the time. And that's really what set Schaap apart, because he set the other guys up and let them give their opinions. And that's really a big part of what made the show, I thought.
I like to pay tribute to Craig Kilborn. He's not your Vitas. He's not my Vitas. He's our Vitas.
He's our Vitas.
Vitas Sabonis, the old Portland Four. That was one of his great catch lines.
That's right. All right, a couple more questions, including this hockey question for you right now. There are four NHL playoff series on TV this weekend, Darren. Nashville against St. Louis, Edmonton against Anaheim tonight. Then you've got the New York Rangers against Ottawa and Pittsburgh, Washington tomorrow. So, which of those is the must-see hockey game of the weekend, if you had to pick one?
If I'm going to take someone and show them hockey and try to make them a fan, it's got to be Pittsburgh, Washington, just because of the star power.
Okay.
In the series, you got Ovechkin. Hopefully Crosby will play, dealing with a concussion. You got Malkin. There's just a lot of great players in that game. Plus, if I'm bringing someone local to the game of hockey, I can show them two Pittsburgh Penguins that played for the Fighting Irish hockey team, Ian Cole and Brian Russ. So that would be a runaway. It's got to be Capitals Penguins.
All right. Sounds good. Last question then.
You're just going to take my word on that?
Well, I'm way too casual. That's why I had to ask you. So now I can sit back and I can go, I can turn on the Pittsburgh game, and I can see what it's all about.
Okay, fair enough.
The 143rd Kentucky Derby, Darren, is tomorrow at Churchill Downs. I don't know about you. Have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby?
Have not.
I have not either, and I was sort of assuming that when I asked this question, but I just wanted to make sure when I was coming up.
I don't have the class to go there.
That's I'm the same way. So it's one of several big sporting events that I have never attended. So what is the one sporting event that would be on your bucket list? What's the one thing you haven't gone to that would be on your bucket list?
You know what? I'm going to kind of go a different direction. The obvious, I'd love to go to a Super Bowl, a World Series, those type of things.
Uh-huh.
So let's take away the obvious ones.
Okay.
One thing I'd really love to do is go to the College World Series and sit there for several days and just watch college baseball. It's a great environment. You've been a part of it. I think for me, outside of all the obvious choices, going to the College World Series would be awesome.
And that was the one growing up in Kansas, not far from Omaha. That was one that I always wanted to go to growing up. And so it was, like, from a personal perspective, awesome that I got to be up close and personal when I finally got my first taste in 2002 being with Notre Dame, and then I got to cover it a few more times after that. And it is, especially if you can go, having a son, Darren, who plays baseball, if you can spend, and Father's Day is typically the opening weekend for the College World Series. Father's Day in Omaha, there's nothing like it. If you can, you need to do that sometime. I will tell you that. I've been fortunate enough to go to a World Series game. I saw the Royals a couple years ago. That was so I crossed that one off, and that was something that I had always wanted to do, go to a World Series game. And so being able to see my team in the World Series is pretty cool as well. And they won. It was game two against the Giants that year. But we've both been pretty fortunate because we get to go to a lot of different stuff with our job. The one thing, I guess, would have to be the Super Bowl. I've never got to experience that. Part of me says, maybe not, just because I think football is the ultimate sport to watch on TV, but I think that would be probably the one thing, to go to one Super Bowl at some point.
See, it would be tough to go for me because when my team is in the Super Bowl, there's a lot of standing and pacing. I can't sit. So I don't know how I'd last trying to sit in the stands and trying to fight through the emotions of watching your team attempt to win a Super Bowl.
It's always different when your team, when you've got a personal stake in Bowl or whatever it happens to be, you throw everything out. It's a lot different trying to watch that compared to a team a series or Super Bowl, whatever, big game, where your team is not involved. It's always different.
Well, in my lifetime, if I'd have went to Broncos Super Bowls, I'd have been sitting a lot in the second half when they were getting their tails kicked.
That's true.
That's the only good news, I guess. I get to sit in the second half because the drama would be over more times than not.
Very true. Very true. All right, so that is rapid fire for this Friday, the end of the week.
Very good. Job well done.
All right, you too.
Great job with that. Always look forward to that segment. We'll step aside for a moment. More Sports Beat coming up. We'll recap the Cubs and Yankees. We'll get to a couple of more things as well as Sports Beat continues on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT. Thanks, Abby. Sports Beat continues on WSBT Radio. Sean Steyers from our studios. Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs. Clinton and South Bend will play tonight at 7:35 on WSBT Radio. Sean, I'm not sure if you read the Ralph Russo article from the Associated Press today, a story on Fighting Irish head football coach Brian Kelly, but there were two different versions of the article. There was the main one that most people saw. Then there was a second piece that just sort of had a question and answer feel to it. And let me read one of the questions and answers and get your reaction, because Eric and I talked a little bit about this in the 5 o'clock hour, so I'll kind of lay low here. And this was a question from Ralph Russo from the Associated Press to Brian Kelly on the perception by critics that he blames players. Now, I think it's fair to point out that I really don't feel like anybody, Sean, on our local beat, the people who cover the Irish on a daily basis, are going out of their way to be critical of Brian Kelly about this. I think there's people nationally that have kind of grabbed this and ran with it, and I think they've been very unfair. Do you agree with that?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So I want to set that up before I read it. So here's what Brian had to say in response to that question about the perception by critics that he blames players. Quote, "I demand, I never demean him. We have a high level of accountability. We're very demanding, and the players expect me to be honest with them on a day-to-day basis. They would say that Coach Kelly being Coach Kelly, that's Coach Kelly being Coach Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
If he came in and sugarcoated it, he's full of it. That's just not him. But what I will change this year is that I can't be honest with assessment of players to the media. Totally honest. Because it's portrayed as throwing players under the bus. Being disloyal to a player. They don't know the relationship with the player. Based upon what happened last year and the fallout that occurred from other media sources, it doesn't do the university, it doesn't do our program any good for me to be forthright when it comes to those kinds of assessments of our players," end quote. Now, I will say, when the NC State game happened and Sam Mustipher took some pretty good shots, I thought those were unfair. So I will say I was one of those people that didn't like that, and
right,
I stand by those comments, and I don't think it's being critical. It's giving an opinion on how I think it should have been done. That was my opinion. So having heard that for the first time, what was your reaction to Brian basically saying, I may not be totally honest about players because I can't trust the media?
Well, I understand, and again, I don't think that it might necessarily mean this local bubble that we're in, that I think that there's, I think anyway, that there's a pretty good trust level there. The problem is when you get into talking about players specifically, there's that old saying when it comes to coaches and how they should handle players: encourage publicly in front of everybody and critique privately. And I think that's probably what he's leaning on now, because whether it's, It doesn't matter who happens to be in the audience when it comes to whether it's national media, local media, any of that. It doesn't matter who's there, because there's always that camera on. And with that camera on, it doesn't matter that we're sitting here in South Bend. We all know that everybody outside the bubble, from, as he said before, 30,000 feet and beyond, they all see it. So even though maybe he has a trust level with the local media here, it is going to be whatever comment it happens to be, because it's going all over the country and the world for that matter. It can get, and it can, and it has gotten blown out of proportion before. So it's probably a good policy. And it goes to even what we've talked about with the Deshaun Kizer comments previously. It's, you know, some things might be better left unsaid, just because it's going to get out there, and once it's out there, you can't reel it back in. You can't put it back in a can.
Well, I think one of the things that I like about having Brian Kelly as Notre Dame football coach is he is brutally honest sometimes.
Yeah.
And he gives it to you straight, and what more do you want than that? Would you rather have a head coach that says absolutely nothing? I mean, we live the Tyrone Willingham era, and Tyrone was very close to the vest, never really said anything one way or the other, that far out of the ordinary. So, to me, Brian Kelly is perfect from a media standpoint because he will give you honest answers. He'll give you emotional answers. In the heat of the moment, he'll tell you how he feels, and you're not going to get that very often with many head football coaches. So you lose that, and that's what I'm concerned about, because that's really one of the enjoyable parts of being around Coach Kelly, is you're going to know where you stand at all times, and the media is going to find out where some of these players stand with him because he's so brutally honest. And I'm worried that we're not going to be able to have a feel for some of these players like we have in the past.
And I understand what you're saying, but I guess it's a need-to-know type situation, because it's one thing if he's being brutally honest with players behind closed doors and in the locker room and inside the Goog over there, but it's another thing if he's talking specifics about players and in the heat of the moment type stuff after games. You brought up Mustafer. So it's one thing if he says the offensive line needs to do this, this, and this, rather than Sam Mustafer, he's this and it's driving me nuts, and he's talking about specific players in that way, because again, then you get those comments, and we saw it on Twitter as well, where he had former players, alumni, all these, so it's not just media, but there are a lot of people that got worked up when he naming names and calling players out in those press conferences.
It's a good point, actually. There were alumni, not just media, talking about that particular situation. 16 minutes in front of the top of the hour. If you Google Ralph Russo and Brian Kelly, you can read the article. I'm not sure how easy it is to find the second article, which is basically the Q&A. Eric found it. I could not find it. He sent me a link. So maybe we can get it up on social media, but that particular article with that quote was very difficult to find.
Yeah, when you said that, I found the original article, because I saw it and I'd read it earlier. It was tweeted, the main article, but I haven't seen that Q&A thing anywhere either, so.
Check it out. It is now 16 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Jay Cutler released a statement today about stepping aside from playing football to talk football. I'll read you that quote next on WSBT. Thanks, Abby. Sports Beat continues on WSBT Radio with Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. Rapid fire earlier this hour. One of the questions centered around former Bears quarterback Jay Cutler. It was announced today that he will be a commentator for Fox's NFL coverage this year, part of a three-man crew, and he released a statement after the announcement was made, and it read like this, quote, "I don't know if retirement is the right word. I don't feel that anyone ever retires from the NFL. You are either forced to leave or you lose the desire to do what's required to keep going. I'm in between those situations at this point in my life. I recently read a quote that struck a chord with me at the time. It was attributed to Henry Rollins, but with the internet these days, you can never be too sure who really said it. Maybe that's a little sample of that dry sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. I gave everything I had to give to that. Now, if I return to that, it would be repetition. It might be fun repetition, but it wouldn't be meaningful repetition." End quote. It doesn't matter in the whole scheme of things. How much of this is him just ready to move on? How much of this he just couldn't get the job he was looking for in the National Football League? To me, it would appear to be the latter. It sounded like he'd love to win the Texans, but they were not overly interested.
Right. And we kind of talked about it a little bit with DeShone Kizer. Would he be the right kind of guy to be that mentor for a young quarterback? Obviously, the Texans had no interest in him, and apparently nobody else did either, which is why he's making this decision to leave football behind. And he talks about preparation, and that's one of the things that you've seen in this last, 36 hours or so since this story started popping up, that maybe he wasn't necessarily the most prepared guy, and you've kind of heard it over the years as well. So would you want a guy like Jay Cutler being that guy in front of your young quarterback, being the example? Probably not. And so, one way or another, He's 34. He's lost the passion. He's jumping into the booth. It is kind of ironic that the two guys who have sort of for almost the same amount of time been lightning rods, polarization one way or another, love them or hate them type guys, Romo and Cutler, are now both leaving football at the same time and jumping into the broadcast booth.
Bottom line for me is, after a decade in the National Football League, he's still the same quarterback who makes the same mistakes.
Right.
He has the ability to make big plays. He's got the big arm, but he's still making the same mistakes. And I would have to imagine every NFL executive has to be saying to themselves, well, why is it going to be different with us? And who knows? We really don't know what he's exactly like in the locker room. There's the perception. But I just can't imagine many NFL teams looked at him as an answer. Just he's basically a bridge quarterback at this stage of his career.
Yeah, and again, you would have thought that at the very least at 34, he's not exactly old by any means. You have to figure he's got at least four more years or so in him that he could have been a bridge quarterback if NFL executives and head coaches thought that his makeup was such that he could mentor that guy or get him to the next guy. But quarterbacking is a premium, so I think it says a lot about what they think about him that he's making this jump now.
This is Sports Beat on WSBT. Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds and Legacy Heating and Air. Cubs baseball pregame at 7:20 on WSBT South Bend.